They had 9 girls. All 9 children were girls.
Well, that's a reason for sainthood right there, right?
Yeah, right there, right there.
This week on Come Receive the Light, we take another regularly scheduled look at the life of a married saint. This time, sharing details about a man whose life was filled with joys and struggles, and he made the most of the difficulties.
Now that I lie on the bed of illness and am confined to the duties of prayer, now I feel well. I regard the bed with joy, because that's where my office is and my telephone, by which I communicate with everyone through mental prayer, holding as a sword in the right hand the blessed prayer rope, which relieves my pain and gives me great joy that defies description.
We'll hear a lot more about this man of great prayer and a large family as we continue with our broadcast. We'll also talk with the founder of a travel company that does it a little bit differently. There's a purpose to these pilgrimages.
There are such destinations that are must-see places, and like 10 places to see in your life or 100 must-see places. It just so happened that most of them coincide also with a rich Christian legacy.
And we'll get into that conversation in just a moment. Welcome again to our broadcast. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross School of Theology in Brookline, Massachusetts. We're on the web at myocn.net and also on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Let us know that you listen. And if you have any questions, share those with us. Again, on the web at myocn.net, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Well, sharing our first conversation today is one of our regulars and one of our Media Lab team members, Bryce Buffenbarger.
We are here today with Father Ilya Gotlinski, a parish priest in Binghamton, New York, and the founder of OrthodoxTours.com. Father Ilya organizes and leads several pilgrimages every year, taking people of many different religious traditions from all over the world to many of the holy places of Orthodox Christianity. You can find out more about this ministry by visiting OrthodoxTours.com, but today we have asked Father Ilya to tell us about pilgrimage itself and the role it plays in Orthodox spirituality. Welcome, Father Ilya.
Thank you very much.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit more about your background? Where are you from and when you became a priest and things like that?
All right. I was born and raised in Riga in Latvia. It's a small republic on the Baltic coast, part of the former USSR. I'm of Russian background. I grew in a non-religious family and discovered church on my own at about the age of 14. And my affection for church was so that right after high school, I went to the seminary. I went to St. Petersburg Theological Seminary for my training there, where I met my wife. She's a church choir director. And then some years later, we came to the United States. It would be 20 years ago now, where I was ordained by Archbishop Peter in New York, and I was serving OCA ever since.
Great. When did you go on your first pilgrimage, and to where did you go?
Well, I was very fortunate that even as I was growing up, my father took me to many different places. And even if he's not a very religious person himself, accepting my choice and trying to comfort me, he took me to many different Christian places. And my first pilgrimage, personal pilgrimage, was to the Holy Land back in 1994. So my love for traveling continued, and I wanted to show wonderful places of faith to my parishioners. So I started to traveling with groups back in 2001, and ever since I'm leading several pilgrimages every year. I didn't expect to be a traveling priest per se, especially since I have my full-time parish ministry here in Binghamton, New York, but it seems to work very well, and I see very particular benefit to people who travel to different destinations and see those amazing places of grace.
Yeah, that's really great that your father was, even though not religious himself, was supportive of this passion that you had.
Yes, I got a chance to see a lot and to experience a lot, and I'm thinking that it's very enriching to people because I do know that many people do travel, and in their travels at times they could come across a monastery or a church, and times you even call, you know, Orthodox travel, but very often what is of essence are the local contacts. because the tourist industry is not necessarily geared toward religious travel, mm-hmm. even if it's called such. It's still a very formal, even if it is a cultural, a tourist presentation. It deals with something other than church services, visits to the monasteries, meetings with clergy, or Christian background. It's amazing that even traditional Orthodox destination, there are very few guides, not only who are maybe Orthodox by faith, but who know what to tell. So that the presentations is very limited. I tried to fill that gap, and that's how my ministry, Orthodox Tours, have started. But eventually, over the years, it attracted not only people of our faith, but also many other Christians, Catholics, Protestants, and some who are not even Christians, but who are interested to learn more about church history, monasticism, sacred art, and just to visit some very unique and out-of-the-way places.
Now, some have argued that spiritual journey is what matters, and that all places are equally good for setting out on the path to the heavenly Jerusalem. So maybe you could tell us what you think is the specific spiritual significance of going on a pilgrimage.
Well, there are two ways of approaching the pilgrimage. On one hand, we can remember the quote from St. Augustine, who says that person who stays home is like person who reading a book with one page, and the one who travels is the one who reads the book with many pages. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we can remember a very good Irish pilgrim proverb, there is no reason to go to Rome to look for Christ. You're not going to find him there unless you're going to bring him with you.
Mm.
So everyone gets out of the pilgrimage perhaps what they want or what they truthfully in their heart predisposed to. Some people say, why to go somewhere where we can just go to church, pray there, contemplate, receive same Eucharist? What is the point of traveling somewhere? But I'm thinking that traveling somewhere helps us to put our own history, something that we're taking as for granted, this legacy of spiritual tradition, into a very particular perspective. I'm not talking even about veneration and mystical aspect of veneration of relics of the saints, icons and such. I'm talking about deeper understanding of our own tradition, where you come into the church that is very ancient and all of a sudden particular aspect of liturgy begin to be understood a little bit better. You may have read about it in the book, but here you see this particular remnant or some particular spot where somebody prayed or preached or where it had happened. You come to the Church of the Holy Resurrection in Jerusalem, and on occasion you can see this very ancient inscription dates back to time before Constantine, before Empress Helena, where there is a little graffito of a boat and Latin inscription, Lord, we have arrived. Mm-hmm. We're coming to a Christian catacomb where there is earliest references to, I don't know, baptized infants or the depiction of the Mother of God that dates back to the end of the second century. It all reaffirms our current practices. All of a sudden, you see that you belong to a very particular history, a very particular tradition that is not just a wishful thinking, but actually supported in a very material way. After all, we celebrate Nativity of our Lord, and we're talking about the material incarnation of God.
Yeah.
I won't be Arian by saying that, you know, God became same physical as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we could not be, as human beings, completely deprived from that physical experience. It does leave impact on us all. And very often that impact leads to great things. Even I'm not necessarily seeing my ministry as ministry of conversion or preaching, but there is a missionary aspect. And I know of a number of people who were inquirers in the Orthodox Church, who may have not even known about Orthodox Church, but who became Orthodox after traveling somewhere. And I do not attribute that to my efforts, not at the least. But they were so moved, so overwhelmed by their experience, they made their choice to be with the church thereafter. And now their journey in spiritual terms continue, but not into any particular earthly place of grace, but toward the heavenly kingdom.
As you're saying these things, I'm reminded of the saying that the journey is more important than the destination. Do you think that that can be true of pilgrimage as well?
Well, in our case, salvation is our destination, so it's of ultimate importance. But the process is certain. Many people in the United States who have joined the Orthodox Church started their journey toward the Church with a book by Bishop Callistus Ware, mm-hmm. where he gives an example of an ancient semi-nun who was sitting in her cell praying. And when somebody asked her, why are you not going anywhere, she said, I am not sitting here, I am traveling. And the way is one of the ancient names of Christianity. Right. So I'm thinking there is a lot of symbolism. There is tremendous symbolism. There is such aspect as a memory of the eyes, memory of the inspiration. Yes, Lord says, blessed are those who have not seen but believe. But over here we're coming in contact with something that serves as an inspiration in our personal journey toward the greater things.
Absolutely. Now, when people are deciding how they're going to spend their time off from work and school, I don't think that places like Israel and Russia are the first countries that spring to mind for most of us. You know, most people are thinking of nice warm places where they can just go to the beach. Why might a pilgrimage be an important replacement for that time just spent on beaches or in amusement parks or wherever else we might spend our precious time off of work for those of us living in modern America?
Well, let me answer to this question in several different ways. Of course, it is not mandatory to go on a pilgrimage. There is aspect of a particular search, need, and thirst. Nobody says that people have to go on a pilgrimage every year, but it just so happens that sometimes people who never went on a pilgrimage after going on one pilgrimage keep coming for more because they have a really rejuvenating experience. Even people who never left the United States and were actually quite anxious of leaving the territory of the country and going to a strange land were absolutely overwhelmed and just can't get enough of being engaged into those new experiences. And we have to keep our mind open. After all, those who have accepted Christ during his earthly ministry were people with an open mind, were people who thought a little bit or were allowed themselves to think a little bit outside the frame because he did a lot of things that were really not formal, that were going outside of the usual boundary. Of course, with short vacation time and with limited finances, it's very difficult for people to make the right choice. And at times you just want to say, I want to go lay down, rest. But I don't think that anyone who ever traveled on a true Christian journey that was adequately planned and adequately executed, who ever regretted their experience. They may not be able, for a variety of objective reasons, to go back or to go on a similar experience, but in 15-plus years of my ministry, I have not heard a word from anybody who regretted that they traveled somewhere.
Yeah.
Besides, there are such things or such destinations that are must-see places, and like 10 places to see in your life or 100 must-see places. It just so happened that most of them coincide also with a rich Christian legacy. And what we try to do to the places like Italy or Germany or Spain or England, if we do travel to the destinations, to show people what they really should see there as tourists, but at the same time to remind them that our ancestors of faith were here. And how is it that you can get tired of your family who loved and prayed for you?
Yeah, and you do have tours all over the world covering so many different places of Christian history, like you were saying, England and Ireland and Egypt, and I think you have, you know, over 40 that you have put together.
Yes, I did the research and prepared over 40 different itineraries. We don't go to exotic places in Africa or South America or Asia. We're trying to be focused on the countries where there is Christian legacy, but we do cover most of the European destinations, both in Eastern Europe and Western Europe, and in the Middle East. Of course, the Middle East is torn by war. Many countries are inaccessible at the present moment.
Right.
But we still continue our journey to the destinations that are safe, safe for now, and hopefully will stay safe. Israel, Jordan, Turkey, Cyprus. The situation in Egypt is improving a little bit, so hopefully we'll be able to return there before too long as well.
So with all these different tours you have led and all the different pilgrimages you have been on, what has been your favorite pilgrimage and why?
I do get that question asked once in a while, and it's very difficult to answer because there are different high points. I should say Jerusalem because it's the place where Lord work, and all of them, of course, very special in its unique way. Yes, I would say, just because I have to, that Israel is, of course, my favorite, and Russia because, you know, I have a Russian background. But I can tell you that I never could get enough of traveling to Italy, where there are so many ancient Christian places and catacombs of martyrs. Turkey or Asia Minor, you know, it's very often oversight, but most of our Christian history and our tradition and Byzantine tradition comes from Asia Minor. Mm-hmm. It's not even Israel or Jordan, but it is territory of modern-day Turkey. Phenomenal monasteries in Serbia and the Balkans. Places of grace in Ireland. There are pretty much no any early medieval monasteries left, just some ruins, so it's more a contemplative place. But when you're in a place like Monastery of Archangel Michael, actually it was featured in recent Star Wars. I haven't seen the movie, but I got some reports that it was part of the movie was filmed there. It has nothing to do with Star Wars. It has something to do with the 6th, 7th century piety, where you're in a remote location and it's just you and God. And it's visually striking, but it's not much there. But you don't go there for much. You go there for Spirit of God demonstrated and revealed in the lives of those wonderful, wonderful saints that lived there for many centuries.
I can understand, just hearing you talk about these things, why it would be hard to pick a favorite.
Yes, there are many places. No matter where you go, even in most unlikely place, you're bound to encounter something. Sometimes people say, pilgrimage was very intensive, I wish we could have stayed longer somewhere. And I said, okay, I'd like to hear your feedback. What would you suggest me to leave out for the next group? And they think, and they said, it's a very unfair question. I said, what do you mean? You force me to make the choice, so give me a hint. Well, keep everything in. Keep everything in. All right, fine.
Very good. Well, and our listeners can find out more about that by going to orthodoxtours.com. And Father Elia, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. It's my honor and pleasure, and may Christ Child bless you in the coming year and always.
You know, a conversation like that could have sort of an infomercial feel, you know what I mean? Or it could have great takeaway value, and I found great takeaway value in that discussion. If you'd like to follow up with Father Elia, just go to our website. We'll have a link to his website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Just click on the Listen button on the homepage and then select Come Receive the Light, or CRTL. You're listening to a weekly broadcast from the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and he's here with us now to talk once again with a regular guest.
It is a pleasure to welcome back Dr. David Ford, who is professor of church history at St. Tikhon's Orthodox Theological Seminary in South Canaan, Pennsylvania. He joins us every month to talk about the lives of married saints. Welcome back, Dr. Ford.
Thank you, Father Chris. Good to be back.
Who's our saint of the month?
This is St. Papa Dimitri Gagastathis of the village of Platanos in northeastern Greece.
Okay. And why is he a saint? I mean, you say Papa Dimitri. Was he the priest, Father Dimitri?
Yes, he was the priest of the local church dedicated to the archangels. Died in 1975, so he's really in our era.
He's our era, yes, yes.
Yes.
I understand we have a lot of information regarding Father Dimitri because he lived from 02 to 1975, as you just said. We even have photos of him, right?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
Is it true that he wrote a diary?
Yes, he kept a diary, which is an invaluable resource, very revealing of his life and his character.
And I understand that he was married.
Yes.
His wife's name was Barbara. Did they have any children?
They had 9 girls. All 9 children were girls.
Well, that's a reason for sainthood right there, right?
Yeah, right there, right there. And the youngest actually became a nun, which caused his wife much grief.
Why?
She was kind of worldly-minded, I guess you could say, for a long part of their marriage. And she kept kind of holding it against her husband that he was somehow denying his girls the right to wear makeup maybe and go into the theater and things like this. Like, he was just so backwards and behind the times and holding his girls back, you know.
I see.
And she was opposed to any of them becoming monastics.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure there are plenty of people that, you know, pull back, especially when the children say that they want to go into monasticism. There's usually a pushback. There are stories of his love and his dedication to the archangels, we hear. Can you tell us about the time the archangels protected him when he was captured by the communist guerrillas?
Yes, well, apparently that happened several times. Captured by communists and condemned to death several times, he was always spared through the help of the archangels. And he had an amazing devotion to the archangels, especially Michael and Gabriel. He spent much time in the nearby church dedicated to them, praying before their icon. And he had begun doing this early in his childhood. And the famous abbot Emilian Nos of Simona Petrus Monastery on Mount Athos, he says, when you needed to see him, you'd most likely find him in his beloved Church of the Archangels.
That's something. You know, when you normally hear about saints being people becoming saints, you think about monastics, you think about Mount Athos, but this is now an individual who's married, who's serving in a village, who has nine children, which that even of itself having six, nine is definitely one of the pegs to sainthood in my eyes.
Yeah, so right. Understandable.
Many, and I think people would have, they listen to this and they're saying, how is it possible that a married man with children would be sainted? Could you help us understand that more?
Well, he's still in the midst of his parental responsibilities and everything. He stayed so centered in God that, and especially with these archangels, he conferred with them apparently every day, and he was able to maintain, to reach and maintain a high level of saintliness.
Now,
so, you know,
been...
as St. John Chrysostom and the other fathers say, being married in itself is not an obstacle,
right,
as long as we are determined with God's help to reach out towards being dedicated to a life of holiness.
How about his patience level? Did he have a lot of patience?
He was amazingly patient, yes. I've mentioned how his wife was often kind of at odds with him. I'd like to read an excerpt from his own notes about his patience and a good example about it. He says, Presbytera was upbraiding me and shouting that I keep the girls behind the times, that I plan for them all to become nuns, that I won't be willing to marry them off, that I'm incompetent, etc. She even spat on me and tried to hit me.
Oh, my.
Yeah. But he says, glory be to God, I was so patient that I didn't speak at all. And without being at all troubled, I went to sleep, praying to God, to the Most Holy Theotokos, and to the archangels, to give patience to me and to enlighten Presbytera. I fell asleep easily, as though I hadn't been there and had heard nothing. As a patient is given a shot by the doctor and is numbed before an operation, so it happened with me too. This was a great miracle of God to me, a sinner. I went to the archangels and prayed, and that was it. The turmoil was over.
Amazing. Well, it says, I mean, Christ himself said, your faith has made you well. How many times, right?
Sure. That's right.
Did he have a long, healthy life?
He lived 73 years. The last two or three years of his life, he was afflicted with a very painful kind of cancer. But actually, I'd like to share his response to that disease, again, from his own diary. He says, the illness which the good God gave me is a great gift to me. Now that I lie on the bed of illness and am confined to the duties of prayer, now I feel well. I left the stall and took up the prayer rope. I regard the bed with joy because that's where my office is and my telephone by which I communicate with everyone through mental prayer, holding as a sword in the right hand the blessed prayer rope, which relieves my pain and gives me great joy that defies description. So what a tremendous example of bearing affliction nobly as Christians.
Absolutely. Well, to our listeners around the world, first of all, I want to thank you, Dr. Ford, and to our listeners, I want to remind them that you've written a magnificent book, Marriage as a Path to Holiness, Lives of Married Saints. You can go to our Amazon store to purchase that book, and the link will be available on our website. Thank you, Dr. Ford.
Okay, Father Chris, thank you very much.
You know, we've had some people ask about previous conversations with Dr. Ford. They're all available on our website, again, myocn.net, along, of course, with that book, which is in our web store, as Father Chris said. That will take you through to Amazon. And any purchase you make, by the way, through our web store on Amazon will generate a donation back to the ministry. Again, the website, myocn.net. This is the Orthodox Christian Network. We're a nonprofit outreach, and this broadcast is just one of many ministries you'll find on the web. Again, myocn.net. I'm Mike Trout. Thank you for joining us. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. We'll be back at this same time next week. I hope you can join us. In the meantime, remember to have faith in what you listen to.